Okay, the next bit of Wallace karaoke is his little essay on Kafka. Well, it's really about teaching Kafka. That's on a serious topic, which is Kafka's humour. But it's also, in part, about the pleasures of reading aloud, so it seemed like an appropriate choice. Some remarks on Kafka's funniness, from which probably not enough has been removed. One reason for my willingness to speak publicly on a subject for which I am direly underqualified is that it affords me a chance to declaim for you a short story of Kafka's that I have given up teaching in literature classes and miss getting to read aloud. Its English title is A Little Fable. "Alas," said the mouse, "the world is growing smaller every day. At the beginning, it was so big that I was afraid. I kept running and running, and I was glad when at last I saw walls far away to the right and left. But these long walls have narrowed so quickly that I am in the last chamber already, and there in the corner stands the trap that I must run into." "You only need to change your direction," said the cat, and ate it up. For me, a signal frustration in trying to read Kafka with college students is that it is next to impossible to get them to see that Kafka is funny, nor to appreciate the way funniness is bound up with the power of his stories. Because, of course, great short stories and great jokes have a lot in common. Both depend on what communications theorists sometimes call exformation, which is a certain quantity of vital information removed from but evoked by a communication in such a way as to cause a kind of explosion of associative connections within the recipient. This is probably why the effect of both short stories and jokes often feels sudden and percussive, like the venting of a long-stuck valve. It's not for nothing that Kafka spoke of literature as a hatchet with which we chop at the frozen seas inside us. Nor is it an accident that the technical achievement of great short stories is often called compression, for both the pressure and the release are already inside the reader. What Kafka seems able to do better than just about anyone else is to orchestrate the pressure's increase in such a way that it becomes intolerable at the precise instant it is released. The psychology of jokes helps account for part of the problem in teaching Kafka. We all know that there is no quicker way to empty a joke of its peculiar magic than to try to explain it. To point out, for example, that Lou Costello is mistaking the proper name, who, for the interrogative pronoun, who, and so on. And we all know the weird antipathy such explanations arouse in us, a feeling of not so much boredom as offence, as if something has been blasphemed. This is a lot like the teacher's feelings at running a Kafka story through the gears of your standard undergrad critical analysis, plot to chart, symbols to decode, themes to exfoliate, etc. Kafka, of course, would be in a unique position to appreciate the irony of submitting his short stories to this kind of high-efficiency critical machine, the literary equivalent of tearing the petals off and grinding them up and running the goo through a spectrometer to explain why a rose smells so pretty. Franz Kafka, after all, is the story writer whose Poseidon imagines a sea god so overwhelmed with administrative paperwork that he never gets to sail or swim, and who's in the penal colony conceives description as punishment and torture as edification, and the ultimate critic as a needled harrow whose coup de grace is a spike through the forehead. Another handicap, even for gifted students, is that, unlike, say, those of Joyce or Pound, the exformative associations that Kafka's work creates are not intertextual or even historical. Kafka's evocations are, rather, unconscious, and almost sort of subarchetypal, the primordial little kid stuff from which myths derive. This is why we tend to call even his weirdest stories nightmarish rather than surreal. The exformative associations in Kafka are also both simple and extremely rich, often just about impossible to be discursive about. Imagine, for instance, asking a student to unpack and organize the various signification networks behind mouse, world, running, walls, narrowed, chamber, trap, cat, and cat eats mouse. Not to mention that the particular kind of funniness Kafka deploys is deeply alien to students whose neural resonances are American. The fact is that Kafka's humour has almost none of the particular forms and codes of contemporary US amusement. There's no recursive wordplay or verbal stunt pilotry, little in the way of wisecracks or mordant lampoon. There is no body function humour in Kafka, nor sexual entendre, nor stylized attempts to rebel by offending convention. No Pynchonian slapstick with banana peels or rogue adenoids. No Rothish priapism or Barthish meta-parody or Woody Allen-type kvetching. There are none of the ba-bing-ba-bang reversals of modern sitcoms, nor are there precocious children or profane grandparents or cynically insurgent co-workers. Perhaps most alien of all, Kafka's authority figures are never just hollow buffoons to be ridiculed, but are always absurd and scary and sad all at once, like in the penal colony's lieutenant. My point is not that his wit is too subtle for US students. In fact, the only halfway effective strategy I've come up with for exploring Kafka's funniness in class involves suggesting to students that much of his humour is actually sort of unsubtle, or rather anti-subtle. The claim is that Kafka's funniness depends on some kind of radical literalization of truths we tend to treat as metaphorical. I opine to them that some of our most profound collective intuitions seem to be expressible only as figures of speech, but that's why we call these figures of speech expressions. With respect to the metamorphosis, then, I might invite students to consider what is really being expressed when we refer to someone as creepy or gross, or say that he is forced to take shit as part of his job, or to reread In the Penal Colony in light of expressions like tongue-lashing, or tore him a new arsehole, or the gnomic, by middle age, everyone's got the face they deserve. Or to approach a hunger artist in terms of tropes like starved for attention, or love-starved, or the double entendre in the term self-denial, or even as innocent a factoid as that the etymological root of an anorexia happens to be the Greek word for longing. The students usually end up engaged here, which is great, but the teacher will still writhes with guilt, because the comedy as literalization of metaphor tactic doesn't begin to countenance the deeper alchemy by which Kafka's comedy is always also tragedy. And this tragedy always also an immense and reverent joy. This usually leads to an excruciating hour during which I backpedal and hedge and warn students that for all their wit and exformative voltage, Kafka's stories are not fundamentally jokes, and that the rather simple and lugubrious gallows humour that marks so many of Kafka's personal statements, stuff like, there is hope, but not for us, is not what his stories have got going on. What Kafka's stories have, rather, is a grotesque, gorgeous, and thoroughly modern complexity, an ambivalence that becomes the multivalent, both and logic, of the, quote, unconscious, which I personally think is just a fancy word for soul. Kafka's humour, not only neurotic but anti-neurotic, heroically sane, is, finally, a religious humour, but religious in the manner of Kierkegaard and Rilke and the Psalms, a harrowing spirituality against which even Miss Flannery O'Connor's bloody grace seems a little bit easy, the souls at stake pre-made. And it is this, I think, that makes Kafka's wit inaccessible to children whom our culture has trained to see jokes as entertainment and entertainment as reassurance. It's not that students don't get Kafka's humour, but that we've taught them to see humour as something you get, the same way we've taught them that a self is something you just have. No wonder they cannot appreciate the really central Kafka joke, that the horrific struggle to establish a human self results in a self whose humanity is inseparable from that horrific struggle, that our endless and impossible journey toward home is, in fact, our home. It's hard to put into words up at the blackboard, believe me. You can tell them that maybe it's good they don't get Kafka. You can ask them to imagine his stories as all about a kind of door, to envision us approaching and pounding on this door, increasingly hard, pounding and pounding, not just wanting admission, but needing it. We don't know what it is, but we can feel it. This total desperation to enter, pounding and ramming and kicking. That, finally, the door opens. And it opens outward. We've been inside what we wanted all along. Das ist komisch.